Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Wesley Mission Victoria and broadcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves and it's an absolute pleasure to bring you another Listen to Older Voices Baby Boomers edition. Over the four parts of this program, we'll share the life and times and music of one of our most loved female artists, Pat Bop Girl Wilson. In part one, Pat shares with us her earliest memories from the early 1950s through to the 1960s. In taking us on her journey, Pat talks about her family and herself, her school years, how, although she came from a working class family, her parents highly valued education, and a father, who'd been a pilot during World War II, was such a highly intelligent man who, along with her mother, was very supportive of Pat throughout her entire life. We also begin to understand where Pat's love of music came from, a love that would lead her to eventually meeting Ross Wilson and marrying him and eventually carving out a career in her own right as a very successful vocalist. But let's start at the beginning. Here I am, speaking with Pat Wilson. First of all, thank you for inviting me into your home.
Pleasure.
Could I start by asking you, what generation are you from and where were you born?
I was born in Kew. I'm a baby boomer. I lived in Kew till I was two, and then we moved to Yarraville. And I stayed there until I went overseas at the age of 20.
Okay, that's a long jump from birth to 20, so let's reel it back a little bit.
Yeah.
What would be your earliest memories that you can come up with then as a child?
My earliest memory, I must have been about, and I have had this corroborated by my mother, I must have been about two, and I was at my grandmother's house and my uncle had bought me a dress.
Right.
And my mum put it on me, and that's what I remember. I remember exactly where I was, where they lifted me up. And, yeah, I would have been around about two and a half maybe.
You mentioned your grandfather. Did you have a relationship with him as a young girl?
I did. Unfortunately, he died when I was about... This was my paternal grandfather. He died when I was about six or seven, but he was a wonderful man. He left great memories, a very, very, very gentle soul. And, I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' place. And then when my grandfather died, as I grew up going to school, which was like we came from quite a large family, as in aunts, uncles, grandparents, great-grandparents, everybody. We all lived around the same area. And, you know, it was quite a Catholic Irish area.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, we all spent quite a lot of time together. And because in those days too, you know, the church played quite a big role in your life if you were a Catholic and if you were going to a Catholic school, and of course we all did. And, you know, my grandmother had a lot to do with the church and as far as singing and horticulture. She was a horticulturalist and she used to do special things as far as flowers go for the church, and also to, you know, for people that had special occasions, they'd asked her to do up big bouquets and stuff like that. She was incredibly clever and arty. Yeah, and I was really the only girl for quite a long time. So, yeah, she just absolutely loved it.
She doted on you?
Oh, totally, 100%.
What about your parents? What was your mum like?
My mother was a country girl from the back blocks of New South Wales, and she was incredibly grounded. Loads of compassion, very practical, absolutely not into clutter and having the need to buy. She just wasn't like that at all. It was lucky for us because we didn't, you know, we were broke. And they were both incredibly well-read. My father had an amazing intellect and knowledge that, you know, as I grew older and older and older, I realised just how incredibly clever he was and how smart he was. And generally it's the other way. You know, when you're a kid, you think your dad or your mum or both are just incredibly smart. And as you get smarter and smarter, you realise that it sort of turns out to be on a par after a while. But he just excelled. Right. He was incredibly clever and he had a very high IQ and he had a thirst for knowledge. But he was a quiet man and he was incredibly witty. So every now and again you'd realise you'd just missed a pearler. So you'd have to ask him to say it again, you know. And he was incredibly funny, but not all the time. You know, he was, as I said, he was a quiet person and he read a lot. And which didn't mean he didn't chat. And, I mean, he helped us all with our homework and all that sort of stuff. Mm. But he just wasn't a big conversationalist.
Mm. What line of work was he in?
He was a pilot in the Second World War. And he was only 18 when the war was coming to an end. So he flew, I think he flew Spitfires, and there was another plane he flew, but he flew for about a year, I think, before the war finished. And then when he came back, he worked for the government, which is what a lot of they did, you know, a lot of guys did. They just automatically became public servants. And my mum was in the Air Force as well.
Uh-huh.
And they met because they both ended up working at the barracks in St Kilda Road. So she'd gone from New South Wales to do her training. She used to fold parachutes. And she went from New South Wales to South Australia and worked for the RAF there. And then she was transferred to Melbourne.
Right. You mentioned your father was a big reader. Did that mean the books played a big part of your early life?
Oh, huge, huge. Well, I still, one of my brothers, especially, like, we all read, but one of my brothers who, you know, has been incredible for me really with music, he's just, like, he's like my dad. He has a huge thirst for books and music. They're his passions. But I started reading at the age of three, like actually reading my own books.
That's quite young.
Yeah, yeah. And so that thirst for books for me has never waned, ever. I've always got books next to my bed and I've always got newspapers everywhere. And I guess it's sort of a reflection of your upbringing, I suppose. I mean, you know, I guess not everybody's the same, but, yeah, you know, that started at an early age. And I remember both my parents having their own papers and thoroughly reading them. And we came from quite a political family as well.
Right.
So, you know, there was conversations and speaking about what was happening during those times that we were growing up. And, yeah, it was pretty interesting, really.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with Pat Wilson. And Pat is recollecting her early life, particularly stories involving her home and her parents.
So there's a lot of learning going on in the home, whether it's sort of
just listening to conversations.
Exactly.
Yeah,
what about your formal learning? What school did you go to?
I went to St Augustine's in Yarraville and I was taught by the nuns.
What
and
was
they were just fabulous, fantastic, amazing knowledge again. I mean, you know, they didn't have any worries. You know, they didn't have to make sure they had a job or they had to earn their money. I mean, you know, it was all, they were looked after at the convent. But I found, as I grew older, I found some of those women to be fascinating. The nuns that were into music were mind-bogglingly brilliant. They had perfect pitch.
Mm.
They were just incredible, you know, and I was part of the senior choir and one of the nuns that was in charge of the choir, probably, you know, let's say there were 25 girls, she could pick somebody that was singing flat.
Wow.
She was amazing, absolutely incredible. And then, you know, we had nuns that taught violin and piano and all that sort of thing. As you grow older, you have more opportunity to speak to the nuns, whereas when you're little, you know, you're in absolute awe of them, you know, and also too, you don't want to do the wrong thing, or not that they were horrible, they weren't, but I mean, it's sort of, you know, it's sort of overwhelming when you're a tiny kid to see these women walking around in habits and, you know, big heavy crosses and, you know, all the rest of it. And, of course, you know, they all dress the same. So, but it was when you started getting older, you realised they actually had personalities, you know.
There
so,
were people behind the
yeah,
guard.
Exactly, yeah, exactly, you know. And then when I was a senior, I met some of the novices that came in, and they were really interesting because they weren't much older than me, you know, and that was pretty wild.
You mentioned that in the convent there was a lot of music, there was singing, and obviously there were music lessons. Later in your life, music became a really important part of your whole being. But was that for your first introduction to music, or was there music in the home?
No, music in the home, country and western. And, you know, my mum used to sing to us, and my grandmother, as I said earlier, she used to take me down to Mass when I was tiny, and she'd be singing away at full voice, you know, I'd be laughing. But she had a piano, and she really encouraged me to learn piano. She let me listen to any radio station I wanted to, and so I listened to music, like the popular music of the day, and I learned to play piano by ear and sing, and then I realised I could sing. And yeah, you know, and I joined the choir, and I think I was about nine or ten, and I won. Oh no, I came second, I think, or maybe I can't remember now. Was first or second? In an Stedford thing, and you know, we actually got paid. I had two backup vocalists, and yeah, it was great. My grandmother was fantastic at encouraging me to keep going, and you know, like I had three brothers, so Mum was at home, sort of, you know, looking after the boys, and you know, we had a couple of, yeah, I had a couple of young brothers, or one much younger than me, and yeah, so it was really my grandmother that encouraged me to keep going with music. And Dad knew a lot about music; he could read music.
Right? Did he play an instrument?
My dad,
yes,
piano.
Right,
but we didn't have a piano at home.
No, it was grandma's.
Down at my grandma's, which was, you know, a 2-minute walk.
Right, the school side of your life, other than the music, were you academically inclined?
Oh yeah, I wasn't as great at math as my father would have loved me to have been. He was brilliant at math. One of my brothers was very well. All of my brothers were pretty good at maths actually, and I wasn't too bad. Like I didn't get really terrible results or anything, but it wasn't my passion.
Right,
I really loved history and English and geography and art and, you know, I mean, yeah, I did math because I had to. Yeah, if I was at school today and I was able to choose, I would do basic math, that's for sure, because, I mean, you need it all the time. And my mum was brilliant at maths as well. So, you know, a lot of all that stuff just rubs off, you know. Like my mum would always make sure that we could add up what we were buying in our heads, and not have to rely on other means of working things out or getting out a pen and paper. So that was a really great thing, and we've all ended up being great at numbers.
We will jump ahead a little bit here. We'll look at the kids today. They carry around in their pockets, in their phones,
I know,
really computers that are so powerful, and everything's done now on a little screen. Obviously it has benefits, but you've got the ability now of hindsight to look back at your education. Do you think that was a better way of learning than they do today?
Oh, I do. I do, because, you know, it was a hard slog you had to put in. You weren't able to just pick something up and check it out and make sure that it did the work for you. Yeah, I do think that the way that I was taught was a really great way, and it was, and you started with all the basics and it was really fantastic. And I mean, I'm sure today, you know, kids have huge benefits from what they're doing as well. And I don't know, maybe it frees them up a little bit more to put more things into their lives, you know, and they certainly don't have to carry around the goddamn huge bags that we do. That's for sure. So just from a health point of view, you know.
We've all got backs.
No, exactly, or shoulders, you know. So that's an advantage there. Mm. But, yeah, look, I'm a stickler for education. I just think that this country now, if we don't have an intelligent quota, we're just not going to survive. I mean, we don't have agriculture's no big deal anymore, and you know, car industry's gone,
manufacturing's basically gone,
manufacturing's gone, and we're brilliant at, you know, technology and also being able to invent things, and you know, for a small country. We have a high intellect and we're really great at being able to do things like that. But, yeah, I just think without education we're going to go down the toilet. I really do.
When did your education stop? What age did you
start? When I was about 17.
Right.
17, so, oh, yeah, 17 going on 18.
So yeah. We were into the 60s by then.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. There's a few years for us to cover before we get to that period. You mentioned the radio in the home. Was that an important part of your upbringing?
Oh, totally. Yep. Yeah. Oh, my whole family. Yeah. It played a really big role. We didn't get TV until 1965. So
that was quite TV, late.
It was, yeah. Yes. You know, and of course we all became completely obsessed with it as soon as we got it. And so, you know, rules came in, no telly until the homework was finished and all that sort of stuff. And my dad was really fantastic. Like, he'd make us all watch F Troop and you know, all those serials that were on at that time that were really funny, written really well. And, you know, and well, Mum was out working at that stage and all the rules stood. Homework first, telly second. But, you know, Saturday morning, I mean, she'd have to vacuum around us while we were just absolutely glued to our music channel, which I think was Uptight. I'm not sure. I know we watched Bandstand and I'm pretty sure it was Uptight. And, you know, yeah, absolutely glued to the telly.
Mm.
But radio still played a big role. And, you know, and then when we were allowed to, and this is when we were all students, we started to buy vinyl.
Okay, so you're moving through your childhood into becoming a teen.
Yep.
Again, we come back to this technology thing. These days, kids have got access to so much in terms of technology, which they use either for learning or game playing.
Yep.
You didn't have that. What were you and your friends doing for fun? What did you do?
Oh, well, when we were little, we played. We just played. You know, I had three brothers and, I mean, you know, and then a lot of the kids in our area, it was a very, there were a lot of young parents in our area, so, and everybody had children, and it didn't matter whether we were from the one school or whether it was the state school down the road, that made no difference at all. We just all became buddies and we lived across the road from a huge park. And so that was great, you know, because one of my uncles was in the tennis club down there, so they had their own football team, their own cricket team. And so we used to go down and support, you know, your brothers or friends that were playing, or we'd just go down there and hang out. Mm. And then as we got older, there were two of us that ended up being really interested in sports. And I became interested in gymnastics.
Oh, right.
And I did that quite seriously for quite a while.
Well, you have got a light frame, haven't
you? Yeah,
yeah. So that would have been beneficial.
It was, and I loved it. And also, I was part of the swimming team at Footscray Baths, and then I did diving for 2 years.
Goodness.
So I was an incredibly active child.
Very healthy lifestyle.
Oh, yeah, totally. And yes. And, I mean, I think probably I was really active, and I mean, if there were days where I couldn't go out during the holidays or something, I guess I'd just read. But, you know, I loved being active. I loved being outside.
Obviously, your parents were encouraging this.
Yeah, and we had lots of animals too, so that was really fantastic as well. You know, I spent a lot of time with my animals, and my parents were just fabulous as far as that goes. Like I said, I mean, you know, we grew up on the smell of an oily rag, like a lot of people did at that time, and especially in the western suburbs. But I don't know. You know, we just, you know, just didn't know about it. We knew that we had to be frugal, because if we'd asked for something and there wasn't any money, it'd be just like, no, you can't have it. So you, instead of like throwing a hissy fit, you just moved on and went and did something else. So
do you think this helped you develop an appreciation or a value for things in life? Like, I mean, did you today, young people, and this is not a criticism, statement of fact, young people expect things to be there when they want it. You know, people get married, they want everything when they get married. As you grow up, from child to teenage, you expect to be given things straight away. Do you think that helped you develop your values and attitudes to
Absolutely,
things?
Absolutely, yeah, I do. And also, too, I think what's great about it is, you know, you get to explore other ways and means, you know. And, yeah, I mean, I can't. You know, look, I did ballet, Irish dancing, because my grandmother, you know, insisted on me doing all that stuff and tap dancing, and it was fine.
Goodness, yeah.
I loved it all. You know, I really loved it all. But when it came to an end, well, I remember I left ballet because I just, you know, I just found it boring, really.
Can you remember roughly what age this was?
Oh, I was tiny.
Oh, okay.
I would have been about, I probably would have started when I was about six, and maybe finished off when I was about eight or nine. It just didn't thrill me enough. And also at that stage I was swimming, which I did really love. And, you know, I was in the school sports and played basketball. And, I mean, we didn't have a gigantic range of sports and we didn't have our own sports fields. It wasn't anything like that. We used the Footscray football ground for a lot of our really big inter-school sports, which happened twice a year. You know, every Catholic school that was competing, we'd all end up there. There'd be thousands.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, a program that presents the stories of everyday Australians through the recollection of their lives. This is a special Baby Boomers edition.
Sometimes it's nice to be able to put things in nice concrete little packages. Mm. And I'm thinking here of the transition from the 1950s to the 1960s. And in my mind, in some ways, there are some nice little packages that translate across beautifully there, not the least being the introduction in Australia of the British beat music.
Mm.
Now, this seems to be somewhat tied up with around about the same period as you leaving school. Were these things connected?
It was just fabulous. You know, I don't know how this happened, but I got a ticket to go and see the Beatles.
Mm.
Now, you know, and my mum's passed away now, which is really unfortunate on a lot of levels, but I never got round to asking her how come I got to go and see the Beatles. I mean, I was a big fan. Our whole household, we had one record player and it was a portable record player. And fortunately, we all really loved the same stuff. So we had the blues, we had the Rolling Stones, we had the Beatles, and we had, you know, the Yardbirds and, I mean, everybody else that was happening at that stage. But, of course, the Beatles were absolutely enormous and so were the Stones. Anyway, yeah, I got to go and see the Beatles. I mean, I remember in Festival Hall where I was sitting, and I remembered that I was so annoyed because I couldn't hear them properly because the screaming was deafening, you know. But I was close enough to be able to hear their harmonies. And then when I went and saw the Beatles film last year, I realised, I was sitting there watching it and I realised, oh, man, they got no fold back. Like, it was just, it hit me like, why I didn't think of that before? How many times have I seen Beatle clips? Don't know. But it just hit me that there was no fold back.
So for people listening who aren't musicians, means they can't hear themselves.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought to myself, that is amazing. Their harmonies were absolutely exquisite and spot on. And then I found out later when I was watching that film that I think it was Paul said people always thought that the Beatles had just started then. They'd been singing for a very, very, very long time before that. And so they'd really honed their skills.
Yes.
And Ringo used to look at George Harrison Oh, no, Paul, I think it was. And Paul would guide him as to where they were in the song because he couldn't hear a thing. But it was just fantastic. And of course, you know, what amazing writers, because there were two young guys that were older than us that grew up next door to us, and that was the first time I heard Elvis Presley.
Did that have an effect on you?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. And then as I started growing up, I, like, whatever the music of was of the day, I just absolutely listened to. And fortunately, I was allowed to listen to that on radio. And my parents were like, yeah, whatever. And, you know, and then I got into listening to a huge amount of stuff, you know, Dion and Bobby V. And then when the Supremes came along, I was absolutely gobsmacked at their harmonies and, you know, Motown. I just thought Motown was incredible.
Do join Pat and I next week for the story of how she met the talented and charismatic Ross Wilson and why they left Australia to live in the United Kingdom, where Ross worked as a musician. And then comes the engrossing story of them both hitchhiking back from the UK to Australia. A program not to be missed. That's part two of The Life and Times of Pat Wilson on Listen to Older Voices.